Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today we continue our Stranger Things September Spectacular. We covered Season 1. We covered Season 4, Part 1, which is just Episode 1, right? We laid the foundations of what this season was going to be about. Now we continue on our journey with Part 2, where we will cover episodes 2 through 6, okay? And if you're keeping track of hours of show, episodes 2 through 6 is about 57 hours long, exactly. Now, in the first episode, there's a lot of season 4, episode 1 of my show. We covered episode 1 of Stranger Things, okay? And it wrapped up with Chrissy going to Eddie's trailer to get the drugs. And then this Vecna, this ghoul, hijacks her whole body and brain and kills her. All right. So episode two, Vecna's curse, starts out with a flashback to season 3. Because if you recall, at the end of season 3, Joyce, played by Winona Ryder, she's bussing down that Russian Stargate. And in the process, it is assumed that she kills Hopper, the police guy, right? Only plot spoilers coming. Hopper goes through the death and rebirth. Kind of. I mean, it turns out he never died. He just got shoved into the upside down. So the police, they're looking for the guy who killed Chrissy. And they think, well, it's got to be old long-haired Dungeons and Dragons nerd Eddie Munson. She was at his trailer buying drugs, and he's doing all this satanic worship role-playing game. So Eddie, he already sees what's going on. He's on the run. He's already like, I'm not sticking around for this. Meanwhile, Mike goes out to Cali to visit Eleven, Will, John, the Byers family, and they introduce a new character, this stoner guy who works at the West Coast pizza shop. A lot of people loved this character. I did not. I thought it was repetitive and obnoxious. But when they film this, they do this camera trick where they show the inversion of the world, of reality. And that's a trick for showing us as above, so below, or so I believe it to be. We saw this in Midsommar. If you were with me when we talked about Ari Aster's film Midsommar years ago when it came out, we talked about this. It's about opening up the new world to the viewer, taking you on this journey through the upside down, maybe? Well, we get back into Max and her room, and I caught an image. I'm going to put this again on the Instagram with all the other images, and it says Camp Crossley. And my conspiratorial paranoid mind says, that looks very similar to Camp Crowley. I don't know. What do you think? It might be a stretch. But I thought I'd snag that and let you decide. Well, Max, she's talking to Dustin. And they're starting to put the pieces together. They're starting to think, hey, maybe something supernatural killed Chrissy. It's like, oh, well, duh. I mean, you know what's going on in Hawkins. Meanwhile, Hopper, who is in fact still alive, is being tortured in the Russian gulag. They put the Bulgarian gas mask on it. Oh, it's terrible. Terrible torture. And meanwhile, this frat boy jock dude, captain of the basketball team, he was dating Chrissy. And now he wants revenge on Eddie because he also thinks that satanic worshiping nerd killed my girlfriend. But the problem with that is Lucas. Remember how Lucas was playing Dungeons and Dragons with his real friends on one part, but then he's also on the basketball team. He's also becoming Johnny Football Star, basketball star in this case. So now he's trapped between these friends groups. And the irony is that both friend groups want to find Eddie. You've got the D&D nerd group that want to find Eddie because they want to help him. Then you've got the jock frat boy group that wants to find Eddie because they want to beat him up. Look at these two different paths. Look at these opposing forces. You could look at it and assign masculine and feminine energies to these things. The D&D nerds would be the feminine, trying to help and nurture and understand. The jock frat boys are the masculine, who are ego-centered and want war. Which one's right? You know what? Turns out neither of them. There's elements to both to consider. But they both take it to extremes, right? Like the D&D nerds, they don't know that Eddie didn't kill this girl. How do they know? And the jocks, how do they know that he did? Nobody knows. And they're just flying off the handle. So, let's see here. So Nancy, old Nance and her nerdy coworker, journalist buddy, they're investigating Chrissy's death. All right, so you got everyone sort of triangulating into this story. So they're investigating Chrissy's death, and this nerd, he starts seeing demonic spirits, kind of like Chrissy saw in the first episode. So it doesn't look good for him. And Nancy, she's interviewing Eddie's uncle, and he tells her, like, hey, there was a similar murder that happened when I was a kid around these parts. And there was this guy, his name was Victor Creel, and he removed his family's eyeballs. And we'll come back to that. Meanwhile, in California, 11 and Mike and who else is there? Will. They're at the roller rink, the skating rink. And the preppies, again, they're bullying 11. All right. She's having a hard time in California, hard time transitioning. They're picking on her, but she's trying to pretend like, hey, everything's cool. It's great. Because she wants to put on a good face for her boyfriend, Mike. Well, they start recording her because they start teasing her. And what's interesting, and I caught this image as well. You can check it out on the Instagram. Instagram.com/IsaacWeishaupt, link in the show notes. If you look at the camcorder recording, the VHS recorder, you know, one of those big square things, and you put this big other square thing in it, it says it's March 22nd. Now, that's curious, right? It's 3/22, which is symbolic. If you ever look up the logo for the skull and bones, you'll always see the skull with the bones and 3/22. And allegedly, the conspiracy is that it references the Bible verse of Genesis 3:22. And that Bible verse says, and the Lord God said, behold, the man is become as one of us to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. It's about man becoming God through the knowledge of good and evil. You see? And it's kind of like that opposing duality of the two different groups trying to assign innocence or blame to Eddie when neither of them know. There's good and evil. There's opposing polarities. And through the knowledge of good and evil, which means you therefore have to dabble in the evil, one can become God and live forever. So it's curious that it does show up as 3:22 on this recording. So Joyce and Murray, they get the ransom note in episode one, and they call the number because they're like, hey, Hopper might be alive, turns out. They call the number. It's a Russian prison guard, and he's like, look, I'm going to help Hopper escape this prison, but it's going to cost you. And there's going to be a payment you got to make to this other Russian guy named Yuri. And they're like, okay, cool. Let's do this. All right. Meanwhile, Nancy's nerd journalist buddy, Fred, he goes out into the woods. Remember, he's seen all this weird stuff? And the spirits, they start messing with him. And they start showing him images of a car accident he was involved with, triggering traumas. Meanwhile, in Cali, Eleven's getting bullied. She grabs an ice skate. And the bully catches one to the dome. Because she chose violence. And we're all here for it because we're getting mad. We're like, hey, why do you keep picking on our girl? And the bully's the worst. So you're like, good. You know, it doesn't kill her, but wounds her. Then, meanwhile, Dusty, Steve, Max, Robin, the whole crew back there in Hawkins, they finally track down Eddie. And he tells them exactly how Chrissy died to exonerate himself. He's shook, obviously. And Dusty is like, look, I'm going to tell you something. There's something weird going on in Hawkins. We found out in the first three seasons of this show that there's some weird stuff going on in this upside down realm. So now Eddie's caught up with what the supernatural elements are. So back to Nancy's nerd journalist friend, Fred. He's being subjected to all these traumas, all these visions. And Vecna catches up to him. And boom, it's murder. Victim number two. If you're keeping track, he's catching bodies every episode. That's one per episode. My God. This guy's on a murder spree. And that's episode two. All right, let's move it right along. Episode three. It's called The Monster and the Superhero. And at the beginning of the episode, we hear how Eleven was MK-Ultra'd to do remote assassinations, which is no surprise, right? Because we covered all that in the first season. We already covered that. They're just reminding the viewer in case they didn't know what was going on. Meanwhile, this Lieutenant Colonel visits Dr. Owens. He was one of the main doctors at the MKUltra Montauk Project, whatever you want to call this thing. I was curious, it was a Lieutenant Colonel. I believe that was Michael Aquino's rank as an Army Psychological Operations Officer and Satanic Temple of Set founder. Anyway, so Montauk, curious story here. Montauk was actually the name of the original script for Stranger Things. The Duffer brothers had set the story in Montauk, you know, Long Island, New York, not Hawkins, Indiana. They changed it. They changed the title. They changed the location. Was it too on the nose? Could have been. But it was supposed to be, and it is, based on the Montauk Project, which is a theory about this Air Force base called Montauk in Montauk, New York. And the claims are that they were studying the paranormal for psychological operations, right? Which ties us into the Michael Aquino, alien contact, remote viewing, and time travel. Now, Montauk is not necessarily the same exact program as MKUltra, but it could be argued that it actually was the next iteration of MKUltra. Because Montauk allegedly took place in the 1980s, whereas MKUltra ran from the 50s to the 70s till it was shut down. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, they only shut it down when they got caught, which begs the question of did they just pack it up and move it somewhere else? Now, fun fact, Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat was on a show called Mysteries Decoded for an episode looking at precisely this Montauk conspiracy theory. Fun fact. Meanwhile, Eleven, you know, she's getting bullied, right? Well, that's triggering her childhood traumas, which is fitting because that's exactly what they did with Project Monarch, which was an alleged sub-program of MKUltra. I tend to believe it. And this comes from Kathy O'Brien. She wrote a book called Transformation of America. where she talks about how she was part of Project Monarch. And there was sexual abuse through rings of elites and Satanists who used trauma-based mind control to create sex slaves and altars in the minds of the kids that were subjected to this. You know, she said she was subjected to it. Now, it goes through some wild theories. It sounds preposterous, but even if elements of the story might be elaborated upon, and look, I don't know, man. I'm not trying to be dismissive, but there's some pretty sensational claims in that book. Even if some of that is sensationalized, I do believe that some elements of this have got to be happening. I mean, look at Epstein. They shut that whole thing down. Have they yet discussed who else was involved with these rings? So anyway, 11 goes through a similar thing where she's subjected to ridicule and bullying and a trauma, and that triggers her memories of childhood trauma. So Eddie Munson, he's still hiding out, right? And the friends are bringing him food because he's got to hide out in this little boathouse. And he's eating from a box of honeycomb cereal. Now, what was curious to me is that the honeycomb is symbolic of the bee, okay? And the bee is the symbol for magic. It's the insect that represents magic. Going all the way back through Freemasonry and the ancient mystery schools. And later on, we hear about how there's a hive mind, okay? All very interesting. Now, the police in California, we're back in California, the story hops all over the place. I'm trying to sort of keep it simple, but I'm doing it chronologically. The police in California, they come to arrest 11 for her bashing homegirl in the head with an ice skate. And it was kind of crazy because they handcuff her. What is she, like 14, 15? They handcuff her and put her into a cruiser. Like, I don't think any of that would happen, but okay. And she eventually gets handed over to Dr. Owens, right? The original MKUltra doctor. What's going on here? Hold that thought. Back in Hawkins. We're at Eddie's trailer where Chrissy was levitated and killed. And you can see where she died, where Vecna killed her. There's a tear forming, portal, if you will, in the ceiling. And we find out Vecna is able to go through the minds of children, through their thoughts, through their memories. And that's how he finds his next victim, you know, because he's already two bodies in. And this time he's going after one of the jocks. Thank God, right? Those jocks, ooh, they're finally going to get theirs. So he starts messing with one of the jocks. And this jock starts seeing all the trippy stuff, indicating he's about to get it too. At the same time, we see Nancy and Robin. They're researching this Victor Creel guy. So they go to the library and they look up the eyeball murders. That's what they call it. Because remember, he takes the eyeballs out. That's what Eddie's uncle or dad said. I don't remember. And it was in the last episode. But what's interesting is you'll notice Robin, who plays a very minor role in this film, or in this season, she is wearing a jean jacket. And if you look, I'll put the image on the Instagram, there's a Moloch bull patch right on the front. It's not the Chicago Bulls. I know what you're thinking. Hey, this is the late 80s. No, it was a bull, which is very strange. Then they're in the library and Robin opens up a tabloid called the Weekly Watcher to get info on wizards and aliens. It was kind of like a tabloidy paranormal sort of tabloidy magazine, which I found interesting because, as you know, when I started out, my blog is IlluminatiWatcher.com. Is there a connection there? I don't know. If you go to the Book of Enoch, the original fallen angels were called the Watchers. Very strange. Now, for bonus points, they're in the library and they're standing on a checkered floor, which is the Moses pavement, right? It's found in all Freemason lodges. They call it the Moses pavement, not because of Moses from the Bible, but because of muses and channeling the muses and the goddess energy. But they're on the checkered floor. It's another symbol for duality, opposing polarities, black and white. Now, I want to play a clip for you, and this is telling the story about Victor Creel, and it's actually very important to the whole season four. We're going to hear about Victor Creel being possessed by a demon to kill.
Holy shit. The Weekly Watcher, I can't believe they have this.
Don't they write about, like, Bigfoot and UFOs?
First of all, UFOs are absolutely real. Bigfoot, I'm still on the fence about. But may I remind you that we are looking for information on dark wizards? If someone's going to write about that, it's going to be these weirdos.
Ah, Elvis, cloned by aliens.
You never know. Victor Creel claims vengeful demon killed family. The murder that shocked a small community.
Ha ha, that's very funny.
I'm not kidding. Get over here. According to several insiders, Victor believed his house was haunted by an ancient demon. Victor allegedly hired a priest to exorcise the demon from his home. Pretty novel for the 50s. Exorcist wasn't even out yet.
Keep going.
Okay. So Victor claimed this exorcism failed, but it angered this demon, which then murdered his family, removing their eyes. Victor believed he was spared as a punishment.
Yeah, well, that's pretty convenient for Victor.
Yeah, or super inconvenient. Victor was declared legally insane by the court, right? Well, what if this is why? I mean, it sounds pretty insane, it just didn't go public because...
The plea bargain, the records were sealed.
What if a demon did invade Victor's home? It's just, this demon wasn't any old demon.
Vecna.
Okay, so Victor Creel, major character, we're going to learn more about. Meanwhile, Dr. Owens, he's talking to Eleven, and he's like, look, you got to help save Hawkins. I know you're having a great time out here in California getting bullied and whatnot and bashing chicks in the head with an ice skate, but there's a battle between good and evil. And there's this Vecna, source of all evil, that's taking over Hawkins. And she's like, look, I'm a monster too. Because remember how she had flashbacks to being raised in that lab and she thinks she killed all the other kids there? She's like, look, I think I killed everyone at that lab back at Montauk. And they don't really address it. That's just where she's at, right? That's just a vibe check, right? That's how she's vibing right now. And they're going to, as the kids say... And they're going to, Dr. Owens is like, look, we're going to retrain your mind so you can get your powers back again. But she's like a little hesitant. She's like, I guess, but like, I'm worried I'm going to kill everybody. He's like, it's fine. We need you to also kill Vecna. And the military thinks that the lieutenant colonel, they want to capture Eleven because they think Eleven is the bad guy. They think Eleven is doing the killing. So we got all kinds of stuff, little cat and mouse games going on. So that Lieutenant Colonel, the Michael Aquino character, him and his military buddies are trying to capture Eleven. Dr. Owens is trying to protect Eleven and also get her powers back. And so on. So now we're going into episode 4. We're moving right along. Man, we're doing good. We're making good time here. It's called Dear Billy. Well, the crew at Montauk, Dr. Owens' crew, go and visit the buyers, Mike and Will, and they're like, look, we've got Eleven. I know you're looking for her, and we're going to retrain her to get her mental powers back so she can fight this source of all evil that's going to end the world in Hawkins. And they're like, okay, cool. Meanwhile, Max, she starts seeing trippy visions too. Vecna's after her too. And she's like, and she knows it, right? She's aware of this. She's been through all this paranormal stuff already. She was fighting the Mind Flayer. She saw her brother Billy get killed, all that stuff. Meanwhile, we go to Nancy's room and we see a poster of Tom Cruise on the wall. Great taste. And we find out she's going to try and talk to Victor Creel, who's in the asylum. He's still alive. The eyeball murders guy. and she's talking to Robin. She's like, okay, we're going to go in there. We're going to interview him. And Robin's like, how? And Nance is like, we're going to pretend we're college students named Ruth and Rose. Now, Rose will play a role later in this show, a huge part of the show. Not Robin's character or portrayal of Rose, but the Rose itself. Foreshadowing, folks. Foreshadowing. So they do that. They go to Pennhurst Asylum, also known as Eastern PA State Penitentiary, near my hometown. And you used to be able to do paranormal tours there, by the way. I don't think you can anymore. I think the Ghost Adventures guys went out there. It's a long history. Al Capone was there, I think. Anytime they talk about old-timey prisons, it's always like, Al Capone was there. You ever notice that? Anyway, so they go to the asylum, and they're going to try to set up this conversation to Victor Creel to figure out what's going on with him. Meanwhile, Murray and Joyce, they track down this Yuri guy. They pay him the ransom. Only problem is Yuri's a shady dude, and he drugs them because he's going to sell them to the Russians because the Russians are still mad that Joyce broke down their Stargate project in season 3. All right. And Yuri figured all this out. Don't ask me how. But he's going to sell them to the Russians. He's not trying to help them get Hopper out like the prison guard thought he would do. Meanwhile, back in Hawkins, Nancy and Robin, they go to visit Victor Creel. And guess what? They get in there. And who's playing Victor Creel? None other than Robert Englund, a.k.a. Freddy Krueger, the guy who played Freddy Krueger. Now, and we already tied in all these ideas of Nightmare on Elm Street with this show. And we did a video way, way, way back on back in the YouTube days on Nightmare on Elm Street, the movie, the first one, and the symbolism. And if you recall, there were some monarch butterflies in the film. And they occur in the scene where Nancy, that's right, the female protagonist in Nightmare on Elm Street, the movie, is Nancy. Similar to Stranger Things Season 4, the Nancy that's going to visit Victor Creel, who's played by the guy who played Freddy Krueger. But where Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street shows up with the MK Ultra Project Monarch Butterflies is when she gets in the bathtub. If you recall that scene, that's the scene where the Freddy glove comes out of the water. Again, more foreshadowing. My God. I'll drop it in here because we're actually going to see that again. And I keep bringing up Nightmare on Elm Street because it's important. It's the idea of the subconscious manifestation of trauma and nightmares, and children specifically. And there's a certain amount of power and, I don't know, evil represented by this. So Hopper, he's in Russia still. He's apparently not going to get helped by Joyce and Murray. He doesn't know that, though. But he manages to escape. He gets out of the gulag, escapes to a Russian Orthodox church, eats a bunch of peanut butter. But guess what? Yuri snitched on his ass, too, because Yuri was supposed to pick him up at the church. Yuri called the Russians, the authorities, to come snatch his ass up, too. No more peanut butter for Hopper. Meanwhile, back at the asylum, Victor Creel, a.k.a. Freddy Krueger, he's telling Nancy and Robin this story about how evil and the spawn of Satan and nightmares are taking over, they were taking over his house. And he says stuff like, all evil must have a home. And he also, like the kids and like Eleven, was also traumatized. His was from war, from PTSD. But take a listen to his origin story.
I have been back from the war some 14 years. Her great uncle had died, leaving us a small fortune, enough to buy a new home, a new life.
What'd I tell you?
Well, this is amazing. It looks like a fairy tale. A dream.
Alice, no running.
It's so big.
This is nice.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
A magnificent home. Alice said It looked like it was from a fairy tale.
Alice, was this your daughter?
Yeah. But Henry, my boy, he was a sensitive child. And I could see he felt something was wrong. We had 1 month of peace in that house. And then it began. Dead animals, mutilated, tortured, begin to appear near our home. Rabbits, squirrels, chickens, even dogs. The police chief blamed the attacks on a wildcat. This was no wildcat. This was an evil. And evil neither animal nor human. This was a spawn of Satan, a demon. And it was even closer than I realized.
So meanwhile, Max goes to Billy's gravesite, gives the big speech, and then Vecna shows up as Billy, right? He's a real jerk. Deceives her, starts making her levitate. Like, oh, damn, he's going to catch another body. But then Kate Bush's song comes on and snaps her out of it. So she inadvertently figures out, like, oh, man, if I listen to the Kate Bush song running up that hill, it kind of pulls me out of that trance. But while she's mentally abducted by Vecna, she gets a glimpse into his world. It's like the upside down, but it's all tinted red. And that's the end of episode 4. Moving right along. Episode 5, The Nina Project. Well, Dr. Owens, you remember he's got 11, and he's like, look, we're going to go through some more projects. You've already had a lot of MK Ultra, but you need a little more. Takes her to the middle of the desert to this top secret project called Project Nina. Nina means girl in Spanish. And it's very interesting that they go through great efforts to show how this place is very isolated from the normal world. First off, it's out in the desert. Second off, they have to go underground. They have to go very deep underground. They go through many efforts to show you this. And this is the initiation ritual. Isolation is one of the key components. And it's like Alice in Wonderland. If you recall in season 1, we saw symbolism planted. Eleven's mother, in her room, she had the white rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. And you add in the fact that this Project Nina is occurring in the desert, it's like a double whammy, because the desert is again a place of isolation, and it's a place of, they say the desert's the greatest teacher. Because it's in this sort of supernatural realm. I don't know if you've ever been to the desert, like Death Valley. It is a very strange place. It messes with your head. It's like wide open. You can see way too far. It's a real trip. That's why Charles Manson took his, the Manson family out there. He was trying to be their great teacher and isolate them from the real world and re-indoctrinate them. So they go down to Project Nina. They're underground in the desert. And boom, here comes Dr. Brenner, a.k.a. Papa. Matthew Modine plays this character. He's back and he's ready for some more brainwashing. He's pumped up. Meanwhile, Max, she is trying to explain to everyone what it was like when Vecna possessed her mind. She's drawing the red fog, and Dusty mentions that it's like Freddy Krueger. And I'm like, there's another reference to Nightmare on Elm Street. Perhaps the red fog is like the Red Scare. The scare of communism, the Soviet Union, all that stuff. There's actually another explanation. We'll get through that at the very end of everything. But they go through, it's very clearly that the red is important. So 11, she sees Papa, and she freaks out. So they shoot her up with some drugs. And she's kind of replaying memories of her childhood in the Montauk lab. And she's in this room with rainbow stripes all over it. Now, if you recall, that's very important. The rainbow stuff is very important. She's actually going over the rainbow is what they say. That's the phrase they use. Because rainbows symbolize the bridge between worlds. If you see Wizard of Oz, they show us, you know, going somewhere over the rainbow because Dorothy goes through this trauma of the tornado and she's transported to another dimension, another realm, where she learns, she goes through the initiation. So the rainbow is the bridge between worlds. In the Wizard of Oz, they go over the rainbow, and that's what it means. And in Crowley's Liber Oz, Liber 77, which ties us into Wizard of Oz, because L. Frank Baum was a theosophist, he was into the occult. Liber Oz was about using signs and symbols to make contact with entities from another dimension. Now, to be fair, allegedly, the inspiration for the term Oz, for Wizard of Oz, came from L. Frank Baum seeing he was in an office and there were some folders set up for, I don't know, people's last names. And it was like A through N was in one folder, but then O through Z was in the other folder. That's what I saw on the Making of Wizard of Oz documentary. That's the official story. Apparently, it has nothing to do with Aleister Crowley. Now, the rainbow also shows up in Eyes Wide Shut, one of our favorite movies here. We've done 7 episodes on it, I think. Also, Red Cloak just died. Kubrick's assistant, Leon Vitali, plays Red Cloak in Eyes Wide Shut. He just died recently. But Eyes Wide Shut goes into exhaustive symbolism of the rainbow if you watch it with the right lens. Tom Cruise goes over the rainbow when he goes into the Gnostic satanic orgy. And then, of course, you've got the Tom Cruise poster in season 4 here. So there's that. Anyways, you get the point. Rainbow is very symbolic, and it shows up in the room on purpose. So Steve, Nancy, Dusty, Lucas, and Max, they all go to this decrepit rundown house, which is very similar to Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Dream Warriors, I believe, is where they first introduced this rundown home with a little girl riding the bicycle, the tricycle thing. Anyway, they get there, and Robin, if you look at her coat, the one that has the Moloch patch on the front, guess what's on the back of the coat? An eyeball, the all-seeing eye. Surely this stuff's put there on purpose. Well, back at Project Nina 11, she's in the simulation and she wants out of it. But Papa tells her the origin of this whole project.
In 1786, Nicholas Dalyrac wrote an opera called Nina. It's a story about a young woman whose lover was killed in a duel. Nina was so traumatized that she buried the memory. It was as if it never happened. Every day she would return to the train station to await her lover's return, a return that would never be. If only Nina could know the truth.
This isn't real.
No, but it once was.
A memory.
Very good.
How?
Never mind how.
Let me out. I want out!
I'm sorry, Levin. You'll have to find your own way out.
It's all the MK Ultra and the Montauk is all about burying a memory. And we find out that Eleven is actually in a deprivation tank, a floating chamber. And this is an actual practice used to achieve an altered state. It's a way of inducing a hallucination or destroying the ego. Again, all initiatory steps. The film Altered States, based on the book Altered States, is, if I recall, about John C. Lilly's experiments doing ketamine in a deprivation tank to make contact with entities. Now, Max and Lucas, they're having a conversation, and we hear some kind of programming, I would argue, because they're talking about the Kate Bush song, and he's like, Kate Bush would never be cool. And the irony there is that her song would hit the top of the charts, what, 40 years later? And it's really strange. And we're going to talk about that in the last episode of our Stranger Things analysis. I grew up in the 80s, and I listened to tons of 80s music. And granted, I could miss a lot. I'd never heard this song before. Was it Mandela affected into our lives? Any Kate Bush fans out there that can say, yeah, no, that was a song back then? I had never heard it. And to be fair, I don't know if I've ever listened to a Kate Bush song. But it's almost like they plant that. Because when they filmed it, this song obviously wasn't top of the charts. Anyway, the jocks. They find Eddie hiding out in the boathouse. They go after him. But remember, Vecna is after that one jock. His name is Patrick. And he catches it. Vecna kills him too. So that's now three bodies caught by Vecna. All right, episode 6. The dive. So the jocks, they're after Eddie. They think he's a vessel for Satan. Now that they've seen him, they're like, oh, we were right next to Eddie and our friend died. Eddie did that. Because that's the only way they can think. So they're convinced now that Eddie's the bad guy. He's a vessel for Satan himself. Meanwhile, back at Project Nina, Papa, he breaks down how this whole MKUltra process works. And take a listen, because this is going to be very interesting.
But just as a stroke victim can learn to walk again, I believe you two can return to your full power. Your abilities are still in here. You just need to remember. Everything that took place in my lab is captured on videotape. Every success and every failure. It's important for you to not just see your past, but to fully re-experience it. In doing so, I believe we can repair your broken signals. As we saw tonight, that process has already begun.
This all happened. Why don't I remember?
Because you do not want to. Our brains have a defense mechanism in place to protect it from bad memories, from trauma. You buried these memories long ago.
Papa's referring to an amnesic barrier. Now, this is the idea, and David Icke presented this years ago. That's where I remember hearing it for the first time. It's like when someone gets in a horrific accident, the brain will shut down before, I don't know, like right when it senses something really bad's about to happen, to protect the mind, protect the person. And what it does is it creates an amnesic barrier and it compartmentalizes the event, compartmentalizes the trauma to protect the person. And that's what they're using in this MKUltra process, as per Papa. So Eleven, she gets back in the deprivation tank because she wants to process the memories and unscramble her brain so she can get her powers back so she can save Hawkins from Vecna. And when she's in the tank, we see her in the crucified position of Christ. And she's wearing all white. She's getting dunked into water. It's a baptism. An occult baptism. And to further prove the point, they focus in on the all-seeing eye of her being opened. And I'll put these images on the Instagram. You got to check them out. So meanwhile, Mike, Will, John, and the stoner pizza guy, they all go to Salt Lake City. And they go to visit Dustin's girlfriend. Remember in season 3, everyone doubted he really had a girlfriend? He does, and she lives in Salt Lake City, Utah. She lives right next to me, right down the street. And in typical Utah fashion, they show up and it's houses overrun by kids. If you don't like kids, don't move to Utah, all right? A million kids. In fact, every time I fly anywhere, I know when I'm coming back home. I know when I'm coming back to Utah, because that's when it's like kids screaming and carrying on and Disney. Everyone's wearing their Disney garb. And it's fine. No shade. Just saying. So they go to Salt Lake City. All right. Meanwhile, Hopper and company, they're in the Russian gulag, right? And the prisoners all get assembled into a room and they're given a feast. And they're like, oh, it's our lucky day. And Hopper's like, uh-uh. We're about to be sent into battle with this creature that they're holding in the gulag. We find out later it's the Demogorgon. So he's like, so you better eat up. You better fuel up for the fight. Meanwhile, back at Project Nina, an orderly... and this is where it gets kind of weird. 11 is sort of replaying old memories. Okay? So we're in Nina. She's in the deprivation tank. She's processing memories. And in the memory, she recalls being a child in the Montauk Project there. And she befriends an orderly. And the orderly tells her that, you know, you can't trust Papa. He lies to you. And you remember how, you know, 11 got her name because she was tattooed with the number 11 on her wrist. And 11 always wondered, well, who's number one? And Papa lied to her and said, there is no number one. And the orderly's like, he lied to you. There was a number one. And to me, this is a very Gnostic twist of the story. It's Lucifer telling man that God is a liar. So the orderly is Lucifer, 11 is mankind, and God is Papa. It's a Gnostic tale. He informs 11 that she has a memory that's been suppressed of her actual mother, because her mother actually came in and visited her and called her out by her name Jane before the people pulled her away. The orderly is trying to open up her eyes like the serpent did in the Garden of Eden. The orderly is waking her up to the truth that Papa and the whole Rainbow Room is a control system and she should not trust it. And in the control booth, Dr. Owens and Papa, they have a conversation. And Owen is like, you know, we should have told her everything. And Papa is like, well, she's going to find out eventually. Heavy foreshadowing. We'll come back to that. Meanwhile, back in Salt Lake City, when they get into Dustin's girlfriend's room, there's a poster on the wall. And what wouldn't you know it, the poster is that of Wizard of Oz. Yes. And on it, we get more rainbow symbolism. So again, the symbolic effect of all these rainbows. And there's another poster, and I'll put these images on the Instagram. You got to see them. There's another poster of the Muppets movie with a rainbow, and another poster of a rainbow that I think is the Muppets again. I can't really tell. But yeah, take a look for yourself. I mean, right there, right in plain sight. Meanwhile, back in Hawkins, the whole town, they're on the hunt for Eddie. Everybody wants a piece of Eddie. Everyone's mad at the cops. The jock comes into the big town meeting, and he's like, it's a satanic cult. And they decide to defund the police. But clearly, the message being sent on the show is that the town folk are just small-minded mouth breathers, and they're foolish for thinking the satanic cult could exist. And when we get into the conclusion of Stranger Things Season 4 episode, I'm going to prove to you that satanic cults do exist, and they are dangerous. Who'd have thought? So Eddie, he is hanging out with Dustin and the crew, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. And they reference Lord of the Rings again. If you recall, in Season 1, they referenced it. And he says, I'm going to follow... Eddie says to Dustin, I'll follow you into Mordor. And that is where the Eye of Sauron is, the all-seeing Eye of Sauron. And it has the horns of Saturn and all this stuff. And if you recall, in the first episode, Eddie does the thing with the devil horns. A very famous image. Like the tower with the Eye of Sauron. So back at Project Nina, they're playing a game where Papa, the memory is that Papa is teaching all these kids that they're trying to MK Ultra. He's he draws circles and says, I want you to stand in these circles and channel energy and have like an energy fight. Well, this is ritual magic. That's what you do in magic rituals. The magician draws a circle of protection and stands within it to cast their spells. And just like in magic, if you come out of the circle, you lose your protection. And that's what happens in the show. If the MKUltra kid gets knocked out of the circle, they lose the game. They even blindfold them on the show. That's the hoodwink of Freemasonry. In the bottom level initiations of Freemasonry, they have the hoodwink blindfold on to symbolically remove it so that their eyes will be open to the new occult understanding of life. Meanwhile, back in Russia in the Gulag, Hopper and company, they're going in the pit to fight the Demigorg, the Demiurge, maybe, right? Dusty, Eddie, and the crew at Hawkins, they figure out that there's a portal at the Lover's Lake where the Jock died. Remember that? And Steve, he crosses over this portal to go into the Upside Down. So now they know something's up. And something's up with where Vecna killed that kid. Meanwhile, Project Nina, 11 in her memory, she sees the orderly. Remember the Luciferian character, the orderly? She sees him getting electrocuted and zapped. And the rest of the students start bullying 11. As she can never catch a break, right? And that's where episode 6 ends. And that's where this second episode of our podcast series ends. But the homework for you, my dear listener, is to watch episodes 7, 8, and 9. We're going to wrap up the whole season on the next episode. So you just completed the second episode. We're coming back next week with the third episode. And we're going to cover the rest of the season. And this is going to be a long one. And then the fourth episode will be the conclusion, where I will wrap it all up and tell you what we saw over these hours and hours and hours. And like I mentioned before, I'm going to have, if you're impatient and you want to support your boy and you want to keep a copy of the video version with all the clips and stuff, you can go to my Gumroad store, gumroad.com/IsaacW. I'm going to have an entry on there where you can buy the whole video with all the parts completely done. You could be done with the whole show right now. You can listen to the whole thing, watch the whole video with clips from the show and all the great stuff, and me yammering and talking to you. It's a bit of a fundraiser, and it's also a way of me saying, hey, you can get the whole thing right now if you want to knock it all down. So that's an option. Link will be in the show notes as always. Till next time, stay woke.